the show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode. I'm your host Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show. Very excited about this week's show. Coming up, we have a question that will be addressed by one of our counselors on the subject of, should I wait around for a job that will help me in my pursuit of marriage, or should I kind of like move on in something else that I may be called to do? I just don't know what to do. What is God calling me to do? So one of our counselors is going to address that. And then our culture segment this week is CCM artist Brandon Heath. Those of you who know him from the previous time that we interviewed him know that it was a really fun interview. He's a great sport, and he let me ask him some crazy questions. So I've got to come up with some crazy questions for him again this time, and you will hear them on that culture segment. But of course, we also have to address, it's kind of like the, you know, bane of my existence every year around this time, we have to talk about the Super Bowl. Because the Super Bowl is happening. In fact, it may be happening now as you're listening to this show. Maybe if you don't like football, you're listening to it now. But we are very privileged to have in the studio, of course, our own Martha Cranky. Martha, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Martha's just, I could tell just the excitement is building in you, Martha, for football.
Yeah, I kind of resonate with your feelings as well, but I'll try to hide that.
We'll see how we do. Well, fortunately, we've brought in reinforcements. We have two fans from the opposing teams that will be in the Super Bowl this year. We have representing the Pittsburgh Steelers, Roy Baldwin. Roy, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Lisa. Glad to be here.
Roy is, in addition to loving to talk about 80s Christian music with me and early 90s, he loves to talk about the Steelers, and he is our director of parenting and youth here at Focus on the Family, a very fun guy, and obviously a football fan and a Steelers fan, hailing originally from?
Western Pennsylvania, Newcastle, which is about 40 miles north of Pittsburgh.
Okay. All right, good stuff. But you've been around, you've lived in New York, and you've been kind of, you know, out there. So you've never adopted any other team, apparently.
That is correct.
Okay, you're loyal.
Very loyal. That's the thing about the Steeler Nation fan base, is we're very loyal to our team.
Okay, well, that is good. We also have, representing the Green Bay Packers, Mr. Patrick Dunn. Patrick, welcome.
Hola.
Good to have you. He's also apparently representing our multi-ethnic contingent here.
Well, the Super Bowl is kind of an international event, so
that's
true. I threw that in.
Well, and especially Wisconsin. I mean, that's just like a melting pot up there.
It is.
That's good. That's good. Patrick, you are like a producer here. I don't even know your official title. You do a lot of stuff with web and video.
Yeah, he got sold all big and everything. And I'm like, so who are you?
I know. Well, he does too many things.
Senior producer for television and webcast.
Okay. See, that's cool.
Yeah,
We have to do another Boundless webcast because people like that when we did it. We've only done one so far.
My people will talk to your people.
That would be good. We even had people, I heard, in Singapore get up in the middle of the night to watch it live. So I'm saying, that's like hardcore. That is almost as hardcore as football fans, you know, the Boundless show. So you guys are going to have to help us out. You both are very excited that your teams made it to the Super Bowl. We have them appropriately attired in their team gear. That's very exciting. We even have a, what do we call this hat that you have, Patrick?
Oh, this is like one of the old leatherhead
type
things. Back before they didn't have face masks or any type of protection and just basically ran into each other and fell down and got carted off.
He has one of those hats. That's awesome. And then Roy has brought his terrible towel, which is kind of legendary, you were telling us?
Yeah, it started back in 1975. Actually, it was kind of a gimmick people were going in and buying yellow towels, and they were all the hand towels. So the department stores got really upset about that because they were ruining the sets. So I guess it just caused absolute chaos in the department stores, in the housewares section and linen section. But so what Myron Cope did was an announcer for the Steelers created what they called the terrible towel. And it's become a legend in football. It's one of the most recognizable things within any sport. It's a terrible towel. And it actually goes to a great cause. Myron Cope's son had autism. And so portions of everyone who bought a terrible towel went to the school that his son was at. And so it's kind of a neat background story on that as well. But
that is cool. Well, yeah. Patrick, that was pretty. He just pulled the philanthropy card on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm in Green Bay every year. They do this thing where the orphans from all over, they get. No, I was just making that up. But they do plenty of good community things.
They do
there
some.
Too.
I'm I'm sure they give some cheese to people.
I mean, there's a lot of some free. Yeah. Everybody some gets free a cheese. Free bratwurst.
Well, I've pretty much announced that for the Super Bowl, I'm going to a Super Bowl party, which is always like, in fact, last year when I was at a Super Bowl party, because my boss at the time was actually out at the Super Bowl, because of those of you that know, we did the big Tim Tebow ad, and so it was a big year for us. My boss was out at the Super Bowl. So I had to deal with the on-site media interviews here. So actually, and it was a snowy day, a snowy night, and so I made the TV crews come to the house where I was at the Super Bowl party, and all of a sudden, all my friends are like, what is happening? I'm like, sorry, just sit down, just watch the game, just act like you're doing it. And all of a sudden, they're on TV, and they're like, well, we didn't sign up for this. So I did do that last year. This year, I'm hoping to commandeer one of the TVs and maybe watch Pride and Prejudice with people that I can. Patrick just got a look of terror in his eyes.
You really know how to live it up. I know. It's crazy.
This is what I'm filing under reasons why I'm still single. It could possibly fit in that category. So I don't know. But Martha, what are you doing?
Actually, my parents are going to be in town for my nephew's birthday. So I think I'll be watching with the family.
Okay. Because they'll put up a good show as far as like being interested. Because they're from Minnesota. So,
they
can't like Green Bay then if they like the Vikings.
I think it will be a little bit of tension for that reason, but our family isn't huge football fans anyway, so we'll go with whoever.
Yeah,
whoever. Sorry, I shouldn't have said
that.
We'll
just go for
the
snacks. I mean, honestly, let's be honest about that. So that's good. Okay, so you guys, you need to start talking. When did you first realize that your team had a shot at making it to the Super Bowl this year?
Oh gosh, well, I think the Packers had that potential throughout the year, but they sort of did this roller coaster. Had a lot of injuries, and so every time it looked like they could really do something, then all of a sudden they'd lose like, you know, two out of their next three games. And so it really was not till right at the end of the year that they just took off, and they had a couple of games they had to win and made the playoffs, and then they just became one of those teams that peaks at the right time. But even now, I can't believe it. I keep thinking like, wow, Green Bay's in the Super Bowl. I mean, I know they're good, but it's still not like there's teams that throughout the year just kind of dominate. And when they get there, everybody says, yeah, well, we kind of figured.
Yeah, like the Colts. I was like, I mean, honestly, I just felt like.
Wow, Lisa.
I know. Well,
that was impressive.
See, I'm trying to warm it up now. take those Pride
this is
and
my,
Prejudice
This is the extent
DVDs
of my football cultural literacy. It's like, that's it. I just hear about the Colts and the Patriots. So, I mean, you'd think that like those are the only two teams that play football anymore. So that's what I'm just saying. It's actually refreshing to see some new colors out there. Last time Packers were in the Super Bowl, when was it?
97.
Oh, okay. So you've had quite a little stretch there.
Yeah, they've made the playoffs a fair amount of times, but they've never, I mean, there's teams that it takes forever to get back, you know, and then there's teams like the Steelers that suddenly are in there all the time.
Okay, Roy, so tell us about that. When did you first realize that the Steelers were going to be in?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the Steelers had a lot of bad press even before the season started because of their quarterback and the issues he had off field. And so he had a 4-game suspension to start the year off. And so I think a lot of Steeler fans were always optimistic because they always produce a great team out there in the field. But I think without your starting quarterback and even after the first few games, another quarterback would go down, and so the season was not looking promising. But I think what was great is that 4-game suspension, they ended up being 3-1. And so when Ben Roethlisberger came back, he was really the gel of the team. And so I think, I think throughout the course of the year, I think we always felt like we had a good chance. Offense has really struggled this year, but again, staple Steelers is their defense and their smash mouth football. And their defense has won them multiple games this year when their offense couldn't deliver it. So we always know that Steelers always have a chance because of their defense. So.
Provided they're not incarcerated.
Incarcerated. That is correct.
They're not thugs and criminals, you know, then we can get them back on the field.
That is
good.
Correct.
Although that's what I understand that's the reputation of the Raiders. It's like everyone I talk to, it's like the Raiders fans are so crazy and they're just all a bunch of thugs. And so that's kind of interesting hearing that.
Yeah, and I think the Bengals definitely have had the market in the recent years on being thugs and criminal behavior. So.
Well, because I grew up in the Bay Area, so we rooted for the 49ers, and it was always the Raiders. We're like, well, you had some Raiders fans too, obviously. But Okay, last time in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Pittsburgh won
over the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, okay.
And it was a great game, and I think this one will. I think everyone's very looking towards the Packers and Steelers playing two storied franchises and playing. So I think this is going to be a very exciting Super Bowl.
Okay. So what are you guys actually doing? What is kind of the spirit of the Super Bowl for you? Like in your homes? Are you doing parties? What's it going to look like?
Yeah, well, we're having some people over to our house, my wife and I, and I have a brother who lives in Albuquerque. He's driving up, and another one in town. Yeah. And so we'll just keep it a kind of a family affair. And yeah, I mean, you don't throw a Super Bowl party and then like, here's the bisque and a salad. You know, it's like fat guy food. I mean, that's part of the fun. So you get all the food and stuff like that, and we'll watch the game and I'll have Tums handy and stuff because I get really nervous. Uh-huh. Like I love watching and I get really into the games, but seriously, like in this last game when they came down to the last quarter and it was a tight game, I'm such a dork. I couldn't sit down. I had to get out. I started like walking all over the living room. I was so nervous and you know, it just gets under you, your skin like that. So I'm sure at some point we'll be, you know, jumping around and screaming and you go through this like emotional roller coaster and stuff. So, but either way, it's gonna be a blast.
Yeah. I mean, are we anticipating it being a pretty close game? It should be.
I would assume so. I think you're looking at one of the number one and number two scoring defenses this year. They're teams that are very, very similar to each other. Hmm. Very defensive minded, have very mobile quarterbacks, great receiving cores. I think this will be a very close, I think a high scoring, but close game.
Yeah, I think the same. They're extremely, you know, if you're a football person and you look at each team and what their strengths are, both teams are very similar. And if one team has the ball while they're facing this other team's really good defense and another way around, and so yeah. I would expect it to be a really close game.
Yeah.
Okay, Roy, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're getting together with our small group and having a Super Bowl party. And so we've already talked about some Steeler staples like kielbasa and kraut. Oh. And we're not back in Western Pennsylvania, so that would be typically pierogies and stuff like kind of the staple things, but the wings and the pizza and the chips and salsa, and you know, so we'll go all out.
Okay.
So it's a lot of fun. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's nice. Now, see, the Packers and the Steelers are both... They're both long-standing franchises, but they're both blue-collar teams, blue-collar yeah. towns,
yep.
and so it's the same. It's blue-collar food too. Mm-hmm. So you've got your kielbasa, you got your bratwurst.
This is why Boulder, Colorado, doesn't have a football team, I guess.
Yeah, it's like,
it would be all the farm fresh eggs
and burgers yeah. and the Super Bowl. You know,
organic soy products and
yeah. Somebody sees you with that up in Green Bay, they chase you out of town. The cops actually go after you.
I think that's true in the Steelers, Pittsburgh as well.
That's awesome. Okay, so explain to us a little bit about, because, you know, Martha and I are getting a little bit glazed-eyed here with the whole spirit behind football. I know you and Roy, you and I were talking the other day about just the fans and what it means to understand football and grow up with football and kind of be part of that. How did that start for you guys?
I think for the Steelers, I think part of it was a franchise. It's one of the oldest in the American Football Conference at this time. And, you know, they struggle like any team starting out the gate. And one of the things they did is they did a name change. So they used to be called the Pittsburgh Pirates, which is now our baseball team. Hmm. But one of the things that they did is they kind of had a fan base say, hey, help us choose the name. Of course, back in Pittsburgh is known for its steel making. And so part of that was then they became the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think that really leveraged and resonated with that kind of blue collar that Patrick was talking about, that kind of blue collar thing. And so the team became the embodiment of kind of that blue collar working mentality. And so that's kind of became that. And then what happened in the early 70s is Steelers became kind of the team of the decade, won four Super Bowl championships in the 70s, two back-to-back. And so, again, when you're winning and there's a kind of a community that begins to surround that, then I think that's kind of why the Steeler Nation became so big.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know. You want me to give you the history of the Packers? Or
well, you are a co-owner of the Packers, so we need to make a note of that.
Yes, okay. I have my one share that I did I had to have on my wall.
Okay, so you own one share in the Packers, which is very unique. I mean, that is a team that is, what is that called? Because most teams have owners, and there's some big unapproachable people that no one knows about.
As far as I know, it's the only publicly owned sports franchise, period. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's owned by fans that had bought shares over three different times. They allowed people to actually buy shares, and so it's just regular people.
Yeah, it is owned by over 112,000 people, we discovered today. We found that out. That is very fascinating. I like that.
Yeah, there you go.
That's cool. Okay. And it is, you know, it is Wisconsin, and it's kind of a smaller town. It's not like L.A. or someone coming out of the gates with a big old team with a city that's transient and stuff.
Yeah, there actually, there's a lot of charm to that. And that's one of the things that a lot of people do appreciate. I mean, Green Bay is kind of like Pittsburgh. It's an old, it was one of the first NFL teams ever, started in like the early 20s or 1919. Yep. They were the Acme Packers at that time, because a bunch of guys working at a packing plant decided to form a football team. So they've been around for so long, but, you know, they're in this town of Green Bay, which is like 100-something thousand people. There's no glitz and glamour. I mean, if you go to Lambeau, you walk across the street from this NFL stadium, and there's like your grandma's house. I mean, literally, there's no sky rises. It's just regular homes, little houses, and people that have lived there forever. And I mean, when I went up to a game a few years ago, we parked like three blocks away in front of this old folks' yard. They paid $5, and it was like, hey, how you doing there? Oh, fine. Yeah, have a good time. It was like, thanks. Hey, we'll be back for, you know, for lunch. Then, you know, it's just a fun place, because it is. It's just so simple, and it's these people that have grown up just loving this team, and then it's just kind of passed down. Now, I was born in Milwaukee, and my earliest memories are, you know, at home were my dad having, like, my grandpa and people over, and they're yelling in front of the TV with, like, a bowl of mixed nuts or something nearby, and I remember you just kind of watched the Packers, and so... Yeah. It just sticks with you. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I've lived in 49er country and Dallas Cowboy country and all that, but you just stay, you're a Packer fan, you stay that no matter what. And like the Steelers, it doesn't matter if they're the worst team, which they were for quite a while, or one of the best, you just stay loyal.
Uh-huh. Okay, so here's our opportunity to get... Patrick needs a tissue. He's getting worked up. I'm going to give you guys the chance to, you know, for the opposite team, kind of get your little digs in. Patrick, Green Bay fan, what is the Steelers' weakness? What are they going to have to watch out for on Sunday?
I think that the Steelers have a really good defense, but I think that if Green Bay's offense is rolling, that they can outscore them. Oh. They can outscore Pittsburgh.
I take it, the goal of football.
Ideally, you want to be able to score more points than the other
team. That's pretty profound,
okay.
Patrick.
That tends to make things work out better, yeah.
That's good. All right, Roy, what about the Packers?
Yeah, I think the weakness of the Packers has been the running game all year, and I think it's kind of been brought back to life in the playoffs, but Pittsburgh's had the number one run defense. Actually, they had the best run defense the Steelers have ever had, which is pretty amazing considering the defensive prowess that they've had. So, I think they'll dominate the front line, and I think it'll be a good game. But I think ultimately, if they can't run the ball, I think the Packers are going to be hurting.
Okay.
Although I've heard they've come up with some pretty tricky plays though too, like where they'll hand off to the running back, and then like the quarterback goes like, whoa, what's that over there? And tries to get the defense to like look, and then the guy runs off. So they're really going to do some crazy stuff.
If that's the case, the Packers are pretty desperate, though.
Okay, so a discussion on the Super Bowl wouldn't be complete if we didn't talk about the commercials as well. So are the commercials the time when you guys run for snacks, or do you get into the commercials as well?
I get into them.
Yeah, I love the commercials.
Yeah, it's always fun to see what everybody's going to come up with.
Yeah. Well, and there's already been some controversy, because there was the, you know, using Doritos as for the Eucharist, which I guess got nixed. There was a big ixnay on that one.
I missed that.
This is how they're taking what they're doing is they're trying to take the lead of Focus from last year of infusing religious themes, but they're just doing it
in
inappropriately.
A snack chip. Yeah, that's good.
So that one got banned. And then Martha and I were just reading about actually a Christian organization that was trying to come up with a John 3:16 initiative, because obviously very highly identified with iBlack and with other, you know, fans that have signs up and stuff. So they tried to do a commercial surrounding that and got that nixed because it was too doctrinally specific or doctrinally separatist. Mm. So that's down. So has anyone heard what are some of the things that we're expecting? Who's coming out of the gate? Pepsi, I'm sure, is going to have something, and all the inappropriate folks that will have.
I haven't heard of any specific commercials, but something that's kind of fun to do for the non-football fans is one year we played a Super Bowl bingo game where just gave everybody a card of like a 5x5 of different spaces and put in like Pepsi and Doritos and Geico and all those different companies. And then as the commercials play, you see who gets bingo first, 5 in a row, and you win a prize.
Oh,
it was
okay.
A lot of fun.
See, look at Martha's got all the ideas.
That is clever.
You guys, how come you guys didn't write that down?
Had like 75 beer.
That's true. If you put Budweiser kind of down, you'll probably win.
Yeah.
I'm expecting Geico to come up with something good. I hope that they're in the Super Bowl. Their commercials are just so funny. They just crack me up. I heard one on the radio recently that was some kind of plan they have for military folks, you know, with a discount. And it's like, you know, wow, that they're going to get excited about that. We need an eagle call. And there's this eagle that goes like, ah! You know, and then the guy who's in charge of Geico is like, I don't think we need to do that. That's over the top. And, you know, that's ridiculous. And then the guy's like, yeah, we need 10 eagles. Cacao. And then they're all because, ah! You know, the screaming eagle is just identified with the military. So love them. Yeah, I don't know. Well, there are several sites. I mean, I know USA Today comes up with their big roundup of commercials on the front end that everyone can check out. And then you have to watch all the meters, you know, after it happens. But that's big money for corporations. I mean, we're looking at, what, $2 million usually a spot to get within the game itself. You always want to get in the first quarter if you can.
Oh, and if done well, like Focus on the Family showed last year, it can give you an incredible amount of impressions and great exposure for a ministry or your business. So I think it's if done well, it's money well spent.
Yeah. Yeah, should be pretty good. So now what happens after the Super Bowl for teams, for players? Basically, I mean, the winners go to Disney World. I don't know what happens. I guess I just never have never found that out.
Yeah, I don't know. Do they, maybe they send them all to Disney World.
They might.
I think they do. They always yell they're going to Disney World, though I can't picture some of these NFL linemen on the log ride. The thing would just sit there and sink. It'd be the first time it ever actually went under.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they all go to Disney World, and you know, the losers, they pack up and go home.
That's one of the worst parts, I think, about the Super Bowl is watching these grown men at the end, like, just crying and so depressed, like, their lifelong dream.
Men have emotions, Martha. we hide
hard
them.
To watch.
But if you look, it's the thing. See, everybody goes like, men barely ever show their emotions. They're just like walls. Watch a guy during a football game and you'll see every emotion. You'll see him angry, laughing, cheering, you know, jubilant, sad, depressed. It, the microcosm of all the emotions in like one play sometimes. You know, and so, yeah, we have them. You just, you know, we save them for the right moments.
Well, if I could say, you know, and I think what it embodies is the time and effort and, you know, placed, you know, and the effort that goes into preparing for the game. Not to quote, this is a great quote, Vince Lombardi, who is a, used
Packer.
To be the Packer.
Packer. Lombardi is, Trophy.
Yeah, you know, the Lombardi Trophy, which you're playing for, is a, I wouldn't say a hero, but one that I often look at in terms of inspiration in his team. And he has this quote, and I think this captures the emotion, Martha. He says, "I firmly believe that any man's finest hour, the greatest fulfillment of all that he holds dear, is the moment when he has worked his heart out in a good cause and lies exhausted on the field of battle victorious." And I think that captures the emotion that you spend your lifetime working towards something, and you do want to come out on the end. And so I thought Vince did a good job capturing, but there's just a lot of emotion that go into that. So
And isn't there like a piece of every guy's dream that kind of feels that. That's kind of like, you know, it's like the little boy, you know, were I able to be an NFL player or were I able to be a Major League Baseball player, and kind of to be, you know, part of a team. And I think that's part of the fan experience, too, is living up to that.
Well, and I, you know, growing up in Pittsburgh, I mean, almost like what Patrick was talking about, you know, as a little kid, I was probably six when they won their first Super Bowl. And I remember, you know, the whole family sitting down around the TV, and then growing up with that, you know, it was going out in the backyard and throwing the football with my father. I mean, so there was a whole experience with the Super Bowl, and you're especially in the connection with dads, I think with father and sons, there's a real connection, and football is that opportunity to do that and to be kind of a warrior, as we, you know, kind of men tend to be, and be able to conquer that. And so I think there's that element as well. And that's probably why there's some level, there's a disconnect from a female perspective on the game of football.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of us grew up playing it.
Yeah. Too.
I mean, if you're a kid, you grew up playing in a youth league, and maybe you played high school ball and even then. And so you know the game and you love it. And it's one of those, it's like anything. If you haven't done it, you don't really know what it feels like. But if you've played, you understand the passion that goes into it, and the kind of ferocity of when you're out there, and yeah, it's a rush. I mean, it's a crazy game to play. And so then when you're watching it, you're going to watch it looking at it through different set of eyes.
Mm-hmm. My football career was ended quickly after it was a singles group. What do you call it? Bowl, I guess. We were playing another church here in town, and I went to go catch a pass and knocked my hand into some guy's head and broke a knuckle. And so, yeah, I had to go get that fixed, and then had to do like 6 weeks of PT on a knuckle, you know. So it was, I went down, you know, it was glorious. You know, it was definitely, yeah, I caught, yeah, caught
that's
the
a
ball
great football story,
but
Lisa.
That was my moment. But ever since then, I've just kind of gone by the wayside and haven't kept up with any of that. So, well, awesome. I think this is a good discussion, and we'll, I mean, I'm so nervous for both of you now, because it's like, you know, one team is going to lose. So this is, it's sad, but I guess we'll know who that is on Monday. And
when I'm not at work, he's not at work.
Someone,
that's right.
You want to know the score? Just check either one of our desks.
Yeah,
yeah. If we're not here,
whoever can't make it, we would. You know, if you need any support, you know, Focus has a counseling department.
Yeah.
So make sure that you know.
Might take
you can,
take advantage of that.
You can call that number. But I think it's fun. It's fun to see people excited about stuff. You know, even if it is football. So Martha and I, you know, we learn a few things, I think, coming out of this.
I did learn a lot.
I know.
That's good.
It's very fascinating. So, and we'll does it help single women to, like, get excited about football or know something, or do guys generally not care? Just as long as care if you watch football.
If you're a single woman, and I mean, not every guy is a football fan, obviously, mm-hmm, you know, but for those that are, and there's quite a few that follow sports, it is an absolute gift from God if you meet a girl who likes football or doesn't care that you like football.
Oh.
Because I know I have friends that, I mean, that they're, you know, they're married, and it's the, you're watching football again? That is seriously, that's one of the worst things you can do. Take anything you are totally, you love and you're interested in, and put someone in your life that rails against it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if it was like, you and that Pride and Prejudice, blah, 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 blah. You know,
I get that all the time.
That
Patrick.
Is not going to build harmony in a relationship. So yeah. You know, we're supposed to try to step into each other's worlds and share each other's interests. And if you find someone that likes the game too, or cheers alongside you, it's a great thing.
Okay,
just
well,
like
that's good.
If we went to the craft fairs,
well,
or
in there,
whatever else,
that's,
you know,
right.
It's, you know, the women, the wives would be like, it's so cool that he went with me, even though he, mm-hmm, you know, half the time you're like, what is that thing? Yeah, you don't know what to do.
Why are people?
No, I think that's true.
It.
I think you don't have. I don't think. I think a guy doesn't expect a woman to be a football expert, just like you wouldn't expect us to be a craft expert. But I think there's that the sense of support. And just kind of loving it. I mean, my wife loves community and having our whole small group over, and we'll all sit around and have a great time. And who doesn't want to have that?
So right.
And there are some women who are hardcore fans. In fact, my friend Heather, major Bears fan, devastated that they didn't make it. But she she would prefer to marry a Bears fan. So if there are any applicants out there, please let me know. So she likes the Bears, and she also can change her own oil. So she's
got a Bears quality. Fan.
That's a Bears fan.
Yep.
So I'm just saying, I'm just putting it out there on her behalf. So definitely, definitely some girls out there that are going to be following the game for sure, instead of just, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. So, all right. Well, great discussion, everyone. It was really fun. So it'll be great to see the outcome. And of course, there's always next year for whoever doesn't win this year. So be encouraged.
I felt it first when I was younger. A strange connection to the light. I tried to satisfy the hunger. I never got it right. I never got it right. So I climbed a mountain and built an altar. Looked out as far as I could see. And every day I'm getting older. I'm running out of dreams. I'm running out of dreams. But your love, the only thing that matters is your love, your love. That's all I have to give. Your love is enough to light up the darkness. It's your love, all I ever needed is your love.
Well, hey everyone, for this week's culture segment, I am very privileged to have Brandon Heath back in the studio with us as a Boundless family. Brandon, welcome.
Thank you. It's also my privilege.
It's very fun to have you here. And thank you for coming in less than ideal weather.
Oh, it is kind of burr cold outside.
It is. Could you please tell us about the situation with your bus? Because we need to be in prayer for that.
Yeah, please pray for the water system on my bus. It's frozen at the moment.
Okay.
And apparently
it was about -20 last night here.
Yeah.
20 below. Yeah.
And we were on the highway driving, so I'm sure that added a little wind chill to it.
Yeah.
I think a pipe burst.
Ooh.
So running water on the bus. But we're all in good spirits. We've got space heaters going, so
okay.
I'd rather be on a bus right now than on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Because being at the mercy of airlines is not my favorite thing. During these winter months.
Yeah, and airports.
And airports, mm-hmm. Yeah, that become your second home.
Mm-hmm.
There was one year I was stuck in D.C., and I remember it was Valentine's Day, so almost this time 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, and it was like there was a line to everything, even to, like, electrical outlets had a line.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty bizarre, so yeah. I'll take the bus with a broken water line any day.
Yeah. In fact, I was just over Christmas, I was in the airport, and a guy and I were sharing an outlet, you know, and I was on my phone, and he was powering up his laptop, and he said, wow, you know, isn't it crazy? We're just all so plugged into our electronics and our technology. And I said, yeah, I said, it makes me wonder, you know, 10 years ago, what did people do in airports? And he said, I think they actually had to talk to one another. So we had this
That's
funny
true.
Conversation over the fact that we both, you know, couldn't talk to one another because
right.
we had to keep up with our email and stuff. So
yeah.
It was a little sad. But, well, it is so good to have you here. We were just talking before we went on air about the fact that you seem to only come when you have an album.
Right.
Which means you're totally using us, but it's cool. Whatever. We're okay with it. Brandon Nell, actually. We settled that your last time around.
Yes, that's is my last name.
That's your last name. But you're going by Brandon Heath now.
Yes.
Everyone in our audience pretty much knows who you are, not only because we've had you on the show before, but because you've written a ton of songs. And
I've been busy.
You have been busy. In fact, everyone, you know, even as you're listening to this, make sure you go to brandonheath.net. That's where you can get all the current info on Brandon. You know him from singing Give Me Your Eyes. Obviously, that one was just coming off the album when we talked last.
Yeah.
And we kind of were humming it around here for a while.
Cool.
And just a number of different projects. So this is really, is this your third now?
Yeah, okay. My third national release. I had some records that I don't like talking about before I had a record deal.
Okay.
But this is the third record that I've done with Dan Muckola.
Uh-huh.
And Dan is an old friend of mine. We were in a Bible study together in Nashville before we even worked together. And so he's kind of really helped me develop my sound over the last 5 or 6 years. And Dan, you know, he's always wanted to go as far pop as I would let him to go. And so this time I kind of gave him the reins and said, all right, man, I'm going to let you do your thing this time. Mm-hmm. And not that he hasn't on the last two, but he's more or less my A&R on records. And A&R is artist and repertoire, for those of you who don't know the crazy music industry lingo. But Dan, not only my producer, but as, you know, my friend and my A&R, picks out my songs for the record. And we have a lot of input from the label, Provident, who I signed with 5 or 6 years ago. But Dan and I co-wrote more on this one than we have in the last two. Mm-hmm. So you'll hear Dan all over this record, but he really is kind of responsible for helping me discover my sound. And, you know, he's always been really supportive of me as a singer-songwriter, but he likes putting those urban beats in the background, which I think has kind of set me apart a little bit.
But I didn't see any collaborations with, like, Kesha on this one. Maybe that's coming up. Maybe that's when he really
Those only happen in the car when I'm singing along with her. Yeah. There are no official collaborations with Kesha.
No, not yet. Okay. So when you're talking about him picking your songs, are you saying that you sit down one day and you're like, hey, Dan, here's like a lyric. Let's throw this down, you know, one that you co-wrote. Or do you just have a bunch of songs that you've written and he starts culling through them? What does that look like?
Yeah, I remember it was probably the beginning of February, and I had a really intensive 2-week writing span where I was doing like 2 to 3 songs a day. But it was amazing. It was like this exhilarating feeling just writing song after song after song. And I've been writing with Chris Tomlin and Matt Redman and just a lot of my songwriting heroes, some in the country world too. But Dan was like, just not feeling all of these, which is always kind of hard, you know?
It's kind of a diss.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a diss. So it's really not. He has high expectations and hopes for me. And so it was back to the drawing board again. And then a lot of the best songs, like they always happen, are the last ones that you write for the record. Mm-hmm. So he and I ended up writing those songs together. And I think he has kind of in mind better than I do what he wants the record to be. Mm-hmm. I just turn in songs and hope and pray that he likes them. Mm-hmm. But there's two on here that I wrote by myself that I kind of wrote early on. One of which I had to really battle for to get it on there. And then one that is still, I think, his favorite on the record. But everything else was co-written with either country writers or some of the you know, standards that I love writing with. Jason Ingram. There's a new guy in town, Nate Campany, that wrote a few with me. And then one of my best friends in the whole world, and if you're listening and you don't know his music, Thad Cockerell is somebody you need to check out. Mm. He has a record called To Be Loved. It's one of my favorite records. So we became friends about 1.5 years ago, and he wrote with me on a couple of songs for the new record too.
Cool.
So
which one did you say you had to fight to get on, and which was his favorite?
The one that I had to fight for was called Might Just Save Your Life, which is the one you were kind of talking about earlier.
I know.
Throwing down some beatboxing too. Mm-hmm. and then, I had to fight for that one, but I loved it. I liked the theme of it. It's about going after the person that you think is hopeless. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, the person that they'd never be into Jesus or into hearing about their salvation, you know. I wrote it about them. And then the one that that Dan loved is the last song on the record called As Long As I'm Here. Mm-hmm. So, and I think from the day that I wrote that one, I thought that's a good one to wrap a record, up, like the last song on a record. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
So we're actually going to hear from you in a little bit. You're going to play for us, which is very exciting.
I am.
Here in Colorado. You are.
No.
Yeah, we're going to, can someone find him a guitar something?
That'd be great.
Or a xylophone. Can you do it with xylophone if we have that?
Harmonica, maybe?
Maybe harmonica.
Okay.
But how can you sing and do harmonica? That's a little
bit. I can.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry.
I play the flute, so I can bring in my flute maybe and
okay,
make that work. So
great.
That'd be good. But you've got to catch us up kind of on what you've been doing generally since you were here, because you had just, I think, moved to Texas. You were going to be at the Woodlands, and that was maybe, what, a year you were there?
I was there for 2 years. It was
2 years, okay.
A two-year commitment, mainly that I made to myself. I think if you do anything, you should do it for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of gives enough time to realize if it's the right thing or not. But moving to Texas was really kind of a big deal for me, because I'd always lived in Nashville. I grew up there, and I remember driving across the Mississippi River with all my stuff thinking, is this really happening right now? But my time in Texas was great. I worked for a church down there kind of as an artist in residence, because they let me continue to tour and pursue my artist career, which was kind of a prereq for me. But I led, 20 Sundays out of the year, I led them in worship, and I never really thought of myself as a worship leader, but they weren't really looking for a worship leader. Mm-hmm. They were looking for something different. And a guy named Bob Swan down there saw me at a Brown Bag concert in Houston and just pursued me. And I was like, well, man, if you got the gumption to invite me to come sing, I'll do it. So it was a really great growing period for me to live somewhere else. But I really missed Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Just the creative part of Nashville. So I moved back in November of 2008, and I love being back in Nashville.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're back there writing songs, kind of obviously still working with Dan and kind of keeping up with that. Did you do any touring or any kind of, I think you did, obviously. You had the whole album experience. So when we knew, it was funny because when I was listening to my previous interview with you, I was asking you about influences and different artists that you liked. And you said, yeah, well, I'm listening to some Coldplay now. They have an album, Viva La Vida. And you asked me, have you listened to it yet? And I'm like, no. And
now, like, everybody and their grandmother
has it. Which
is funny.
That's now like asking someone, so have you ever heard of the song Thriller?
exactly.
It's kind of like that.
That's
so
funny.
That was kind of funny. But now, I mean, honestly, your album is kind of like that. When you go to a lot of folks and you say, hey, anyway, I'm listening to this album by Brandon Heath. They're like, I love that album. I just love it.
That's cool.
Which, yeah. Speaking of which, I need you to give a little shout to Rebecca Lewis in Canada, because when I talked to her, she visited us with her friend from the Nova Scotia, New Brunswick area, and said that she would marry you if you ever gave her the opportunity.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm just saying that if the opportunity arises.
She's open.
Okay. She's open to it.
All right. Well, Rebecca, I'm sure you're great.
She is.
And if I didn't, dislike cold weather like I do, I would think about Nova Scotia. But
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that was a very, very kind attempt of you to kind of smooth that over. That was good. But she's a huge fan. In fact, she specifically mentioned that interview when she came out here, and she's like, I just love Brandon Heath.
Oh, that's cool.
So she's a lot of fun. Speaking of which, you're still single.
I am single.
Because, here at the Boundless Show, we have
a lot of... You guys are matchmakers.
We are.
Matchmaker. Mm-hmm.
We are. But dating anyone?
I am.
Okay, so you are. Oh, yeah. Rebecca, I'm so sorry about that.
Sorry,
I didn't
Rebecca.
Do the reconnaissance on the front end. Just had heard a rumor. So,
yeah.
But tell us, I want to talk a little bit about the album, because it's called Leaving Eden.
Yes.
And obviously a lot of themes there. It's not like you just woke up one day and realized you were a sinner and so you need to write this album. So tell us a little bit of the background going into that and why you chose to focus on those themes.
Yeah, my label asked me about a title like Leaving Eden sounds like a real downer. But, I don't want it to sound like a downer. I just want it to kind of sound like the reality of things, And I'm kind of a news junkie. I watch the news a lot, and I spend a lot of time on Fox News and CNN and Drudge Report. And it just seemed like I got all my cues from those news channels, and I think a lot of times, we all are kind of aware that you only see the bad news. You rarely hear about good news on, big network news channels. And I think that kind of breeds a little bit of skepticism and negativity and I don't know. I just don't want to. I feel like I've really filled my life with that a lot. So I wanted to just Leaving Eden came. The song came from an idea with a co-writer named Lee Thomas Miller, who's a big country writer, and he won Song of the Year last year for the CMAs. But Lee and I have become friends, and we wrote that song Leaving Eden together because we both kind of feel that we kind of need to get our heads out of the news a little bit and more into real life. And I don't think it's good to necessarily be naive, but I don't want to just base my life around the current events, you know. I want to create my own news and just say what God's doing in my life. And I've been really inspired by this guy named Bob Goff, who more and more people are going to know about Bob because he's writing a book right now. But Bob is my mentor, and he took me to India a few years ago. We probably talked about this the last time the record came out, but that was my first time to a third world country. But I've been doing some crazy things with Bob, like skydiving, and I've learned how to ride a motorcycle and all these crazy things because Bob talks me into it. And everybody needs a Bob in their life. But I don't know. And Donald Miller is another one of my favorite authors, and I'm fortunate to call him a friend, but it's about living a better story. And so those are things that I've really been focusing on the last couple of years. And Leaving Eden is just kind of everybody else's story. And we all kind of feel the effects of what happened in Eden. But I think there's a point where we can just say, I just want to live a different path. I want to walk on a different path. And if we're walking away from Eden, I want to be walking towards hope rather than hopelessness, you know, and dwelling on the bad news. So the record starts like that, but the next song, Your Love, there's a line that says, and though my innocence was taken, not everything is lost. And so that's the direction I want to go in, and that's the direction the rest of the record goes in.
So what steps do you take to do that intentionally, to not just be carried about by news events, whether they're happening to you or by you, or just to wake up, you know, one year, you're in January now, 2011, February 2011, you know, here we are ticking this year by already, you know, what are you going to do so it's not August, September, and you're like, whoa, you know, what happened here?
Yeah, well, I make a goal of at least getting to Africa every year and a half. So in March, I'm going back to Uganda for 10 days. And I think that kind of helps to keep my horizons a little bit broader than they can be at times. You live on a bus and you just kind of, you know, you can get into a routine like anybody else does. So going to Uganda is always good for me because, you know, I leave my guitar behind and I just go to learn and to serve. And I think, honestly, if you lead a life more of service, you end up blessing people in this really immense way. And then you also receive something that is always a little bit different than you would have expected, you know? So I think being more of a servant and trying to figure out how to give of myself a little bit more than I have in the past is always good. I mean, even dating is kind of like that, you know? I remember waking up a couple of years ago thinking, man, I feel like senioritis. You know, like when you're ready to graduate from college, you're like, I just want to get into real life. I'm so ready to kind of not be a bachelor anymore, you know, and not be about myself anymore. And so there's little things that I do that are disciplined. You know, like I grew my beard out last year. It was hilarious. I didn't shave it for 4 months. So I just want to give myself these silly little like goals, but at least
That could be a corollary to the singleness issue though. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you're right. So, it doesn't help with the singleness.
Let's just put that on the table.
Yeah. So, anyway, I did like a 10-week boot camp kind of fitness thing too.
Oh, yeah.
Just anything. I don't know. Anything I could do to, discipline myself a little bit more.
Yeah.
I've been trying to do that a lot more often.
Yeah. You also went through a pretty substantial breakup, I know, and really had to kind of climb out of that. How, I'm assuming that was something you, you know, hadn't expected, and no one does when they go into a relationship, especially when they are being intentional and considering marriage. And most Christians, you know, certainly you, I hope, aren't just out there dating for the sake of going bowling with someone. So what, you know, what really have you, how did you kind of climb out of that, first of all, and kind of what have you learned kind of through that experience looking forward now and giving relationship another chance?
Yeah, that was actually, man, was that during What If We? I think it was about 4 years ago. So, yeah, it was right before I wrote my last record. And I needed counseling. A fellow artist, Bebo Norman, actually, I was on the road with him at that point, and he said, you should go see Al. And Al is this guy in Nashville. He's my favorite part of the Christian music industry. All the labels in Nashville basically underwrite for a counselor to meet with us, artists. So if you're on a label, you can meet with Al. And he has a great ministry called Porter's Call. And it's all, you know, non-for-profit. And but Al meets with us as artists who have this really weird, bizarre life. But he gets it, you know, and he meets with couples all the time. Well, I met with Al about this breakup, and I think the first two sessions we were talking about the breakup, and then all of a sudden it was about me, you know? And I started digging deeper and deeper and deeper into my life, like way deeper than I really was ready to go. But I mean, it was so good for me to go there. Al said, you know, if we're gonna arrive somewhere, we have to start at the beginning. And the beginning is really Eden. It's in fact, it's the loss of Eden that we all need to mourn. And a lot of times we just don't. But we all can feel the effects of it and feel the effects of sin in our life. And so that's where it all began for us. And so I remember that day mourning Eden, but then also kind of taking the responsibility for my own decisions and actions and finding out what is my apple? You know, what are the things that I kind of choose to replace God with? And so that was a really, really cool beginning for me. And I highly recommend good counsel. And I would highly recommend somebody who knows the Lord and knows the Word to give you advice, because that's always got to be a beginning place.
Well, I've definitely been there and done that. Definitely one of the breakups I went through, I did counseling afterwards, because it was very, for me, it was a lot of mourning and a lot of grieving of the loss, not only of that individual, but the hopes that I had kind of put in that future and stuff. And so looking at that, but also recognizing that I was really blaming myself for a lot of stuff. You know, I was like, man, I have a communications degree and we couldn't even communicate. And I'm like, what is that about? Like, you know, certainly if I just, you know, share, I was like, you know, it's not like this guy needs an ESL class. I think we both speak English, you know, but why can't we put anything on the table and resolve it? So it was hard. It felt like it was a failure, a personal failure for me. So I think looking at
But man, it's so worth getting into those relationships, because you learn a lot about each other, and you learn a lot about yourself and what you're looking for in a spouse. And so I think it's great to date. But you have to realize that you could and probably will get hurt. But there is a lot, I think, that you can take from that. And I certainly have. I mean, it stinks to go through it, but I don't have any regrets at all.
Yeah, that's good. Well, we have to get to your song, but before we do that, you just need to tell me about Carrie Underwood's wedding.
Because
it's not everyone, and it's not every artist that gets a call, hey, I'm a fan of yours, and will you please sing in my wedding?
Yeah.
No, very few folks have asked me to sing in their wedding. I mean, well, I've sung in a few, but
perhaps you can sing in my wedding someday.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would appreciate that. I'll do the beatbox.
Okay.
Come up with something. Yeah.
In Nova Scotia. Are you cool with that?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Okay. All right.
Rebecca, there may be hope for you. We'll see. I'll keep tabs on it.
We'll see. No, Carrie mentioned me in People magazine, and my mom subscribes to People and called me ecstatic one day. And so that's how I even found out that Carrie was a fan of my music. And I just happen to be a huge fan of hers. So the first thing I thought was, you mean I have a chance with Carrie Underwood? but yeah, it turned out
Who doesn't think that? What single guy doesn't
Who doesn't dream that? Well, she was engaged. That was what the whole article was about. And so, and then my publicist, Alicia, kind of keeps up with the buzz on the street. And so she, Carrie did an interview with somebody at radio and said that they were going to do, the first dance was going to be one of my songs, Love Never Fails. So I saw Carrie at a party and said, hey, you know, I'll come sing at the wedding if you want me to come sing at the wedding. So we decided to make it a surprise for Mike, her fiance, now husband, who turns out Mike was the fan of my music that turned Carrie on to my music. And so we surprised him at the on the first dance there, and I was there. And it was really cool because they had a string arrangement behind me, and all the guys playing with me were the same guys that played on my record.
Oh,
wow. That played on Love Never Fails on the record.
Yeah.
So, it, I mean, it was like a dream
yeah.
playing with those guys. And then
That's
being
a dream gig.
It was. There was 250 people. It was a small wedding. Mm-hmm. I'd been reading, you know, stuff on the internet that there were going to be, all the American Idol judges were going to be there. There wasn't any celebrities. It was all family and friends. Aww. And it was really special to be a part of that day. And Carrie and I will text every once in a while, but, you know, we both have busy schedules, so we don't get to hang out a ton. But
yeah.
I am a fan of hers, and it was definitely an honor to be a part of that big day.
That's very cool. All right, you're going to play a song for us. You're going to play The Light in Me.
Yeah.
That's what I understand. So yeah. Let's hear it. Well, Brandon Heath.
Yeah, this is probably the next single off the record.
All right.
The Light in Me. My life before you, I was a flame burning down. I was burning out, but you knew me better. For you there was never a doubt. Not since you gave me life, something was different. I knew it the instant you put the light in me. The spark, the shot to the heart. You are the hope that leads me out of the dark. You let your love shine down so that the world could see that you put the light in me. The light, 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 you put the light in me. You are the maker. You tell the sun when to rise. I'm just a house on a hill, but you make me brighter than all the stars in the sky. Keep me from growing dim, 'cause in your perfection I'm just a reflection. So pull me closer, and I'll catch like a fire, and I'll hold you higher. 'Cause you put the light in me, the spark, the shot to the heart. You are the hope that leads me out of the dark. You let your love shine down so that the world could see. You put the light in me, the light. You put the light in me, the light. You put the light in me.
That song was The Light in Me. The album is Leaving Eden, and we've been talking to Brandon Heath. Great to have you here. We got to have you back maybe sometime in the summer when it's not so cold here.
Or maybe my next record.
Maybe. Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Or your next record.
When it's a little bit warmer.
Okay, it's all about him, just whatever. But or if you get married before then, I will sing your wedding and maybe do a flute solo. It could be a twofer.
Is that a promise?
That is not a promise. We'll have to work out contractual agreements, but
okay.
We'll see. I'll have my people call your people.
Okay, sounds
good. We'll see how that goes. Unless Carrie Underwood needs me for something, and then
okay.
I'm going to have to drop you like a bad habit. I'm very sorry about that. But we'll see. No, I'm just teasing because we love Brandon Heath. So thank you so much. Get all the info about Brandon at brandonheath.net. Also info on the album. In fact, the music for this week's show is going to be bumpered by tracks from this current album. So very exciting stuff. Check it out and get a copy for yourself and your friends. Thanks a
yes.
lot.
Yes.
Thanks, Brandon, for joining us.
Thank you.
Message on your telephone. Everybody's wondering what you're doing home. You were starting and you're missing the party. Can you hear it playing your favorite song? Everybody's singing but something's wrong. Cause you're missing.
Hey, hey, are you listening?
Hey, are you listening?
It's no good
to be
opening up this week's inbox, and I'm privileged to have Glenn Lechins in the studio with us. Glenn, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Lisa.
Great to have you here on the Boundless Show to answer a listener question. We've been getting a lot in lately, so we're having to bring you guys down here more often to fill fill the gap here and get some of these answered, which is great. It's very helpful. So, here we go. We've got a listener who has a question about his current job options based on a whole bunch of stuff, I guess, in his past and currently. So he says, I recently graduated from college and continued pursuing a master's just as a random shot in the dark at what God wanted me to do next in my life. Part of my decision to do that was the fact that I thought I saw God piecing together a relationship in my life that would lead to marriage. But when it turned long distance, I hated being in the town I was in because I always felt alone. As time passed, my parents and I agreed I should move back home. I've been working on the things God has shown me during this time, but I don't see how I'm going to get from this point to my final destination. I want to be a missionary, but it seems right now I'm just stuck at home doing the same thing every day. I'm able to help with the youth department here and would love to be the youth pastor because I really like these teens. Unfortunately, one of the credentials my pastor has is that the youth pastor has to be married. I've tried posting my resume and finding a youth pastor position, but the whole not being married thing is cause for concern. I don't want to just go to the mission field alone. So right now I'm working a dead-end job that barely pays for my vehicle and vitals. I'm wondering, should I just wait where I am to find a spouse and then pursue the mission field, or should I go out and try to find whatever job I can?
Well, it's exciting to hear that this individual really wants to follow the Lord and be used of the Lord. Just our openness to following God is really where it's at. And, you know, it is, there is a tendency to want to look at the destination. I think one of the things that's key for this individual is for all of us, is to not so much look at the destination, but to look at the journey. Because I think that's really where God uses us. I mean, maybe for right now, the position that he's in or this individual's in is really the best place for this individual, but to be open to what God wants to do in and through those situations. I think one thing that's important, an important caution I would say, is it's important for this gentleman not to look at missionary dating. You know, who do I find to go out on the mission field? If that becomes the focus, then it could be very easy to move into a relationship that's maybe practical and pragmatic, but not one that really is going to be a meaningful life partner, which God intends marriage to be. So I think a person has to be a little bit cautious of that. Certainly, it's reasonable to share his passion and desire for ministry and mission work. That'll have to be a significant element of whatever relationship that this individual gets in.
Okay. So you're saying, you know, not to look to specifically let looking for a missionary or someone whose missions minded hold him back in.
Well, if he's looking simply for a mission partner, then he may overlook some things that are going to be important in the marriage element. So I think it needs to be in one sense a wedding between someone that he could be content with and God brings him together with as far as a marriage partner, but also someone that can be involved in ministry. I think of Priscilla and Aquila as two that Scripture talks about as far as their mission involvement. But at the same time, it's important to realize that marriage is not the only element as far as being involved in ministry. In 1 Corinthians 7:32, Paul talks about the single individual as having the ability to really be focused on things of the Lord because they're not focusing on how to please their spouse. So I think there's balance. I'm not saying that you have to be single to please the Lord and serve the Lord. I'm not saying you have to be married to serve the Lord, but to be open for what God brings about.
So what should he do right now as far as feeling stuck? I mean, it's almost like he kind of backtracked. You know, now he's living back at home. He lost his relationship. He feels like he's in a dead-end job. Are there any practical steps he can take while he's waiting to see where the next big move would be?
I think he should still be open to finding and being around women who have a passion for the Lord. I mean, some of that is just going to develop as far as group interests or if there's a church singles group ministry of some sort, that can be helpful. But I think probably the biggest practical element is what he's thinking. If he's thinking that, you know, if I just find the right woman, then ministry will be a breeze, it's probably not going to work that way. If he's looking at it as, okay, in the midst of being single right now, how can God use me? When I'm, you know, standing at the bank and talking to the bank teller, how can God use me to be express his kindness and love to people? Just in the job he's at, how can he do that? And to certainly be open for ministry, I think it's good that he's seeking some type of ministry outlet even right now, but to not let that become a barrier to continued growth.
Okay. Thanks, Glenn, for weighing in on that. As always, we want to hear from you. Make sure you write to us, editor@boundless.org, so we can address your question on a future show. And if you have any comments about this one, feel free to write us, editor@boundless.org. Or if you have any experiences or anything else that you think would be helpful to this listener or others who may be going through this. That is it for this week's show. Make sure you tune in next week when we'll have more questions and topics that we are dealing with here for you young adults. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.